This is an open letter to anyone who has a trans person in their life, no matter how distant. That means all of you.
Within the LGBT community, we have a saying that we tell people. We tell them, it gets better. And what I realized that day was that it gets better for some of us. It gets better for those of us who live long enough to see it get better.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Queer job rights cases head to the U.S. Supreme Court. A trans teen discusses pronoun protocol. And the late Lyra McKee leaves a lasting message. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Taiwana Johnson.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 27, 2019. The U.S. Supreme Court announced on April 22nd that justices would review three separate cases dealing with LGBTQ workplace bias. The central question asks whether or not Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that bans employment discrimination on the basis of sex also protects les, bi, gay, and transgender people. Lower courts have arrived at different conclusions. There have been split decisions on cases involving sexual orientation and cases involving gender identity or expression, though most federal district courts have ruled that both are covered under Title VII. The highest court in the land is being asked to settle the issue. The first case comes from Michigan and involves the firing of funeral director Amy Stevens after she told the devout Christian owner of Harris Funeral Homes that she is transgender and would be coming to work as a woman. The 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in Stevens' favor in March 2018, saying that the funeral home violated Title VII when they fired her. Daniel Zarda lost his job as a skydiving instructor in New York. He tried to reassure a female customer who was nervous about the closeness they'd shared during the dive by telling her that he was gay. Altitude Express fired him for that gentle coming-out gesture. The 2nd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in February 2018 that Title VII does indeed apply to sexual orientation. But Gerald Bostock was fired from his job as a county child welfare services coordinator in Georgia when management found out that he played in a gay recreational softball league. The 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected Bostock's appeal in May 2018, deciding that sexual orientation is not covered by Title VII.
The Obama Justice Department argued that Title VII does prohibit workplace bias based on sexual orientation and gender identity or expression. Conversely, the Trump administration has claimed that Title VII offers no such protection to LGBT people. Lawyers will argue the cases during the U.S. Supreme Court session that begins in October. All eyes will probably be on Chief Justice John Roberts as the potential swing vote. There are four reliably pro-queer votes on the High Court. Roberts often, but not always, votes with the conservative majority that's likely to vote against LGBTQ employment rights. A decision is expected to be announced in June 2020, just as things are heating up in the U.S. presidential campaign. Democrats have reintroduced legislation to add workplace protections for LGBTQ people to federal law, legislations that most people in the country believe already exist. Passage of such a measure could steal the High Court's thunder. That's probable in the House, but Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is not likely to let such legislation see the light of day in his chamber.
A court in Turkey has overturned a ban on LGBTQ pride events in the nation's capital city, Ankara. The ban was established in November 2017 under emergency powers given to the government after an attempted coup the year before. Local authorities had banned LGBTQ pride activities because they could provoke reactions within certain segments, like sometimes violent anti-queer protests by right-wing religious groups. The 12th Administrative Court's April 20th decision favored the plaintiffs, Turkey's leading queer rights group Chaos GL. A similar effort had been rebuffed last November. One of the group's attorneys told reporters that the court ruled that the state must protect the fundamental rights and freedoms of LGBTQ people. Amnesty International called it a momentous day for LGBTQ people in Turkey, adding that love has won once again. Pride events have also been banned in the country's largest city, Istanbul, but elections in March replaced the homophobic mayors of both Istanbul and Ankara with moderate leaders whom the Middle East Eye described as being more supportive of queer rights. The European branch of the global LGBTQ advocacy group ILGA recently ranked Turkey third from the bottom among all countries in Europe and Western Asia, two places below notoriously anti-queer Russia. Only Armenia and Azerbaijan were considered in the survey to be worse for LGBTQ people than Turkey.
Police in the central Ukrainian city of Dnipro invaded the gay night spot Potemkin at about 1 a.m. on April 20th. According to the queer rights group Nashmir, there were about 30 people in the venue at the time. Police forced all the customers and staff to lie on the floor while they confiscated mobile phones and other personal property, along with a supply of condoms. Consensual adult gay sex is not a crime in Ukraine, although sometimes violent animus towards LGBTQ people in the socially conservative nation is common. Several accounts describe the police officers as abusively homophobic during the raid. Two foreigners who were visiting the club were forced to sing the Ukrainian national anthem. One customer was reportedly injured. The official website of the Dnipro Police Department claims that the club was raided for breaking laws involving prostitution and human trafficking. A statement issued by Nashmir complained that, at the time when there is no shortage of genuine criminal offense in Ukraine, including hate crimes based on sexual orientation, the police actually engaged in the fight against gay sex between consenting adult men. Management and some of the Potemkin customers swept up in the raid have filed formal complaints with city authorities.
In other news, the Florida city of Tampa has elected a proudly out lesbian, Jane Castor, as mayor. The city's first female police chief won in overwhelming fashion with close to 73% of the vote over her businessman opponent, David Straz. This despite what the Tampa Bay Tribune called his record spending on the race. Former out Houston mayor and current LGBTQ Victory Fund head Anise Parker hailed the 59-year-old Castor as the first openly lesbian big city mayor in the southeastern United States. During her victory speech, the mayor-elect called her partner and political consultant Anna Cruz invincible. Castor said that her victory sends a resounding message to our community, no, the nation, that Tampa celebrates its diversity and lifts everyone up in a positive way. Castor's victory follows the elections in Chicago of out lesbian Lori Lightfoot and in Madison, Wisconsin of Satya Rhodes Conway. Another candidate, Jolie Justice, is vying in a Kansas City, Missouri runoff this June to be the fourth lesbian city chief executive to be elected in 2019, which Parker is calling the year of the lesbian mayor.
And speaking of out city mayors, South Bend, Indiana's Pete Buttigieg continues to be among the top tier of candidates competing for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. Former Vice President Joe Biden finally announced his bid this week, solidifying his current leader of the pack status. Buttigieg was condemned by right-wing evangelist and Trump apologist Franklin Graham this week, who urged Pete to repent or face eternal damnation. The Indiana mayor responded on CNN that God does not have a political party. According to Buttigieg, the core of faith is regard for one another. There were at least two articles this week about how Buttigieg's Midwestern married Christian persona is driving the religious right nuts. A member of the U.S. House of Representatives, Virginia Democrat Don Baer, this week became the first federal lawmaker to endorse Buttigieg's candidacy. Baer said, "Everybody I talk to, even my Republican brother-in-law, is excited about him."
And finally, officials in Taiwan's capital, Taipei, announced this week that the city's Department of Civil Affairs has started to take in-person and telephone bookings for marriage registrations from lesbian and gay couples. The April 23rd announcement comes ahead of the May 24th deadline set by the island's constitutional court for the beginning of marriage equality if lawmakers fail to act by then. The court ruled on May 24, 2017, that denying civil marriage to same-gender couples is unconstitutional, and ordered the legislative yuan to pass marriage equality laws within 2 years. In a series of referenda last November, sponsored by an anti-queer group, voters favored a separate status of civil unions for same-gender couples and rejected civil marriage. That has put lawmakers between the proverbial rock and a hard place, even though referenda cannot overturn constitutional court decisions. They've been unable to pass any measures that could meet the judicial requirement. However, they've still got a few more weeks. Nevertheless, a traditional wedding banquet is being planned to celebrate marriage equality outside the presidential office building in Taipei on May 25th. Unless lawmakers come up with a stopgap measure, Taiwan will become the first in Asia to legalize the marriages of same-gender couples.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude. For the week ending April 27, 2019, follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced with Brian DeShazor, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast.
And now you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Taiwana Johnson.
I realized that I couldn't run away from religion anymore because religion shapes how LGBT people are treated in the world. And it shapes how we LGBT people feel about ourselves.
Changing religious teaching to save lives later in the program. Are you a decent human being? The Outcasting Overtime crew has a suggestion for how you can show it.
This is Outcasting Overtime from Outcasting Media, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Andrew, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Amelie talks about the importance of pronouns, particularly when referring to a trans person.
This is an open letter to anyone who has a trans person in their life, no matter how distant. That means all of you. To start, here's a thought experiment. I'm going to ask a relatively simple question. Take a moment to answer the question in your head and think about your answer, all right? The question is, what is your gender? Here's my response to that. Male? Female? Doesn't matter. You're not. Feels pretty bad, doesn't it? Probably not too bad, though, considering I'm a stranger on the radio instead of a relative or loved one. But what if I were a relative or loved one? You tell me what gender you are, and I laugh it off and say, no, you're not. How does that feel? Getting validation from others is something most of us need to be happy. If you're straight or cisgender, you probably don't usually think about this in the context of gender, but you've almost certainly experienced invalidation in some other aspect of your life. Gender is a very important aspect of most people's identity. Imagine how bad it must feel to have somebody invalidate it. This is the core of the pronouns issue. Pronouns are words used to refer to and describe people and are inherently gendered. He, him, she, her. So when transgender people transition, their pronouns usually change. Someone you've known as he is now she, and that can be confusing. But it's important to respect these new pronouns, as they allow trans and non-binary people to not feel invalidated. When somebody is misgendered, it's hurtful. This isn't just for trans or non-binary people. It would be just as disrespectful to address a cisgender male using female pronouns or vice versa. Most people wouldn't want to misgender a cis person because it would be considered disrespectful. So why not extend this basic human decency to trans people? This is not to say that everyone who has ever misgendered somebody lacks this basic human decency. Misgendering is often a mistake, and that's fine. It's okay to get things wrong, as long as you make an attempt to get it right and not demean or belittle others. Getting pronouns right can sometimes be difficult. When somebody you've known your whole life by a certain name instead of pronouns asks you to use different ones for them, it can be weird and difficult to do, especially when a person's body doesn't match what you might expect for their identified gender. When people make a mistake about pronouns, they often make a big scene in correcting themselves. As a trans person, I'm not a fan of this. Obviously, I can't speak for everyone, but literally all trans people that I have met dislike this kind of experience, and for good reason. It feels alienating and draws unnecessary attention to something that shouldn't even be seen as an issue. If you mess up somebody's pronouns, I would suggest quickly and calmly correcting yourself in the moment, then perhaps privately apologizing later. Mistakes happen, and that's all right. Just correct yourself. But there are some people who just can't be bothered to put in the effort to correct themselves. I've experienced this with people, and it's not pleasant. If someone isn't interested in using the tiny amount of mental energy to do something as simple as using correct pronouns, there's probably not much that can be said to convince them. But if this is you, please do consider how bad it feels to be invalidated by others and whether you want those around you to feel the same way. Finally, there are people who intentionally misgender trans people. For some of them, it's a political statement. For others, it is an attempt to antagonize that particular person. But at the end of the day, this is just deliberately causing distress to another person. Even if you do not personally agree with the concept of being transgender, that doesn't justify going out of your way to hurt others. When all is said and done, there's nothing that can be done to force someone to use desired pronouns. And honestly, I think it's for the best that everyone has the freedom to express themselves to others however they like. As a person who identifies in a way that many don't like, it would be hypocritical of me to say otherwise. So this is not an appeal to society to make it illegal to misgender anyone or something, but rather an appeal to those who simply don't understand why pronouns matter. It's just basic human decency to use the correct pronouns. Nobody is forcing anyone to be a decent human being, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be one.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit independent producer based in New York. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
Your poison pen strikes again, anonymous, putting me down in public, 'cause I'm different from you, hiding behind your tarnished cross, putting my life in a box. Shut the lid, shut the lid, shut the lid on my humanity. But open hearts and open minds can change the world. Homosexuality is not sin. Hey, it's the skin I'm in, so get used to it. If Jesus were here today, he'd be ashamed of you. So why don't you start it?
Lesbian freelance journalist Lyra McKee left her Belfast, Northern Ireland home in late May of 2017, bound for the U.S. with a delegation from the U.K. in search of American values. The experience, the writer for such publications as BuzzFeed, The Atlantic, and MediaGazer brought back, became the basis for her TEDx Women Talk in Stormont later that year. McKee had learned something about the power of engaging people on a personal level, particularly religious people, to change attitudes about LGBTQ issues.
For me, the hardest part of the trip was when we got to Orlando and they told us we were going to be visiting a mosque. Now you ask yourself, why would I find it hard to visit a mosque? Well, for those of you who don't have gaydar, I'm gay. And don't worry, you can laugh, it's okay. And I hated myself for much of my life because of what religion taught me about people like me. And when I stopped hating myself, I started hating religion. But I was intrigued by this mosque because it was in Orlando, And a year to the week that we were in Orlando, 49 gay people were slaughtered. Sorry, 49 people were slaughtered in a gay nightclub called Pulse. And this mosque had led the response to that tragedy and had condemned it. And I was intrigued by that. This was at a time when Christian churches in Orlando were refusing to bury some of the dead because they were gay. So to have a church come out and or a mosque come out and condemn this was a big deal. One of the victims of Pulse that always stuck with me was Brenda Marquez McCool. She was a woman who was out with her gay son that night in Pulse supporting him. And when the gunman unleashed his bullets, she threw herself in front of her son. And he survived, but she didn't. So I decided that I would go into this mosque with an open mind. And I did, and we met with this lovely man called Bassem, who was one of the leaders in the mosque. And we talked about everything, and eventually Bassem and I had a conversation about LGBT rights and what Muslims think of gay people and difficult, thorny subject. But we had a really pleasant conversation, but neither of us knew what was about to happen next. There was a young man on our trip, who I'll call Mahmood, a young Muslim man, and he was listening to the exchange between Bassem and I. And when we finished talking, he spoke up and he addressed Bassem. And he said, "My best friend was gay. He was Muslim, and he committed suicide." And at this point, Mahmood burst into tears. And he said, "I did everything I could to save him, but I couldn't." And he told us this story of how this young Muslim man couldn't live with being Muslim and being gay and felt that the only option he had was to die by suicide. We were all crying in the mosque, I think, by that point, and we were all mourning for this young Muslim man that we'd never met and now that we would never get the chance to meet. You know, when I left religious education at 16, I swore that I was done with religion and I was never going back to it. And I was never going to have another conversation that I couldn't help with another person of faith again. When I was in that mosque that day and I was there to learn about American values and I ended up getting schooled on my own culture by a Muslim. Because what I realized was that I couldn't run away from religion anymore. Within the LGBT community, we have a saying that we tell people. We tell them, "It gets better." And what I realized that day was that it gets better for some of us. It gets better for those of us who live long enough to see it get better. I realized that I couldn't run away from religion anymore because religion shapes how LGBT people are treated in the world. It shapes the laws and how they treat LGBT people, which we can see from the lack of equal marriage in this country. And it shapes how we LGBT people feel about ourselves. The first lesson I learned about being gay was that it was evil and that I was going to hell for it. And I learned that from the Bible. There were times that I would cry in my bedroom as a teenager, bargaining with God, asking him not to send me to hell because I was so convinced that I was going there. You know, this text, this Bible, I know for so many people it offers them hope and it offers them salvation. But for me, it offered a prison sentence. And I think it's the same for a lot of other LGBT young people. LGBT suicide rates are through the roof. What do we do about this? I feel the only answer is to change religious teaching of homosexuality and LGBT issues. And I don't mean we berate Christians and shout at them or berate Muslims and shout at them. We need to do the one thing that I didn't want to do when I left at school at 16. We need to have conversations, difficult conversations, and fight for the hearts and minds of those who oppose us. I've studied this, and when you ask people like Megan Phelps Roper, who was a member of the Westboro Baptist Church, a hate group in America, when you ask people like this, when you ask former neo-Nazis, the most extreme people, when you ask them what changed your mind, what made you abandon your views, they'll tell you the same thing. It was a conversation. Someone who they were opposed to struck up a conversation, and they learned that that person was not who they thought they were, and they got to a point where they could no longer hold those views. People tell me this isn't going to happen. There is no way the churches will change their teaching or the mosques will change their teachings. You're mad. And I would have agreed with them. But 6 weeks ago, I was out in a gay bar, not this one, with my friend, Jordan. He was from a Free Presbyterian DUP voting family in County Legendary. avoid that Londonderry dairy thing. I hate that. And we were out there with his mum, who is a Scottish free pea who goes to church every Sunday. And she was out in this bar supporting her gay son, just like Brenda Marquez McCool was out in Pulse that night supporting her gay son. Don't tell me there's no hope, because for too many LGBT young people, that is the only thing they have that keeps them living. And by the way, that free Presbyterian mother went into work the next day and told everyone about this amazing thing she'd been to called a drag show. Now, if you had told me that I'd be sitting in a gay bar with one of Ian Paisley's disciples drinking cocktails and watching a drag show, I'd have told you you were mad. So, what can you do if you thought you were here to listen passively to me rant on? No, I've got a job for you all. If any of you are uncomfortable with the thought of someone like me, please come up to me after this event and talk to me. I won't bite your head off. I won't call you a homophobe. We'll just have a conversation, and I'll show you that I'm human just like you. If you are comfortable with the thought of someone like me, have a conversation with someone who isn't and try to change their mind, because you could be saving a life. Finally, I'd like to send a message to all LGBT young people who are currently struggling, especially those from faith backgrounds. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Jeremiah 29:11. This talk is in memory of the Pulse 49 and all LGBT people who've died by suicide. Thank you very much, folks.
What are you afraid of? Is it that you fear? Open hearts and open minds. I said open hearts and open minds. They start here.
That was lesbian freelance journalist Lyra McKee speaking at TEDx Stormont Women in November 2017. McKee was covering a clash this year between police and the new IRA in Derry on April 18th when she was shot and killed. The new IRA has expressed regret for the incident. Lyra McKee was 29 years old. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from John Dyer V and Tawana Johnson, produced with Brian DeShazer, from Outcasters, Amelie and Andrew, produced by Mark Sofus, and with a tip of the This Way Out hat to Frida Worden. Rockin' English and Link performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WZBC Newton, Massachusetts, KMUD Redway, Garberville, California, 5CST Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, and some 200 stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Please do stay tuned.